Welcome to another edition of the River Avenue Blues podcast. I'm Joe, doing it solo this week. It's been a rough Memorial Day weekend here at River Avenue Blues headquarters. Both Jay and Mike are incapacitated, but we will have Will Leach of Sports on Earth and New York Magazine on the show later. We'll be talking a little Cardinals, talking a little Yankees, and in general having a good time. But the good news is that we got a number of mailbag questions this week, so that should take us through the first segment with little problem. So we'll start off with Jerome, who asks, which Yankees player have you enjoyed watching the most, whether it be for a season or a career? Such a subjective question, and it's one I really wish we had Mike and Jay on to answer. For me personally, there is no better season to watch as a Yankee than A-Rod in 2007. Say what you will about the guy. They didn't win that year. They struggled at times, but the man just annihilated the baseball that year. It was one of the most magical, dominant seasons I have ever witnessed firsthand, especially from anyone on the Yankees. So from an individual standpoint, that's where it is. From a career, I'd love to say Don Mattingly, but he came up before I was born, and I wasn't really conscious as he became a star. He was my favorite growing up because he was the man at that point. But for a career, I don't know how you say anybody other than Derek Jeter, Mariano Rivera, or Andy Pettit. You know, those are the guys for the Yankees. But again, you know, that's a question I'd rather have a little more respective from. So Julian asks, if Solardi kept this production going all season, would we expect him to be starting next year even with A-Rod coming back? I'm not so sure. I mean, well, yes. I say yes. Absolutely, he should be starting because they will have an opening at second base. He can take over that with A-Rod at third. But also consider that there's just no chance A-Rod's playing every day. Even if he's healthy, he's not going to be able to play third base every day. So there will definitely be reps there to be had, and Solarte could definitely take them. If he keeps producing at somewhere close to this level, I still don't buy that he's going to end the season at the stats he's at now, even though he's slowed down a little bit. Even if he ends kind of close to here, I don't think the Yankees will have trouble finding him at bats in a regular starting role next year. He's just been one of those emergent guys, and you just can't let a guy like that, a guy who has come out of nowhere to produce for you, kind of slip through, especially when the Yankees still need so much help in the infield. Next up is Thomas. He gives some compliments with the rebooted podcast, especially Jay. And I'm sorry, Thomas, that Jay is not on today. He writes, was wondering your thoughts on Teixeira's rebound. Do you think he can keep this up? He's having probably his best hitting season since 2009, and I feel like nobody realizes it due to all the injuries getting more attention. With Teixeira, I absolutely buy it. He's slowed down a little bit in the last couple weeks. We found out before the game on Monday that he has a sore wrist. He sat out the game. Girardi said it's not a big deal. That sort of thing is what they had planned to do, is give him a days off here and there to rest his wrist, rest his legs. So that's not really a concern. Keep it up, I guess, is a relative term. I think Teixeira will have his best season since 2009. Not as good as 2009 because that was a MVP caliber season, but I think that he'll have a very good season. I remember before last season, before he suffered the wrist injury, he was on a big thing about rebalancing himself. He had a few leg injuries in the past few years. He thought it stemmed back to the devastating leg injury he suffered at Georgia Tech, I believe, in 2001 or 2002. He thought that, you know, he injured his leg then. He was never balanced since then. But, you know, you're in your mid-20s, you're working out every day, you're playing ball, and, you know, you can kind of overcome that and compensate for that. But as he gets into his 30s, it's going to become more difficult. So I think he realized in the years before that he was just so unbalanced and that was kind of wrecking his game. You could see it in every plate appearance. We've posted so many posts with him looking so off balance at the plate with his leg, you know, with his back leg at the front of the batter's box and his front leg at the back, you know, severe open stance, waggling the bat. He's gotten really, he's got a lot more fundamental at the plate this year. He's closed up his stance. He looks more balanced. His hands are down. He's a lot less action. It's almost like the change that Kevin Long made with Curtis Granderson in 2010, kind of chilled the noise out, got him just from a fundamental ABC hitting position. I really think that he's going to, I don't know what keep it up exactly means. He's been doing phenomenally so far, but I do think that he's going to have his best season since 2009. We have another Thomas who writes in, if Roberts is, as I believe, only playing second every day because the Yankees don't think Kelly Johnson is a real second baseman, why not just actually boost the defense and play an elite defender like Ryan there? What kind of package do you think it would take to pry Murphy from the Mets? And he thinks it'd be a 1.5 to 2 win upgrade. Here's the thing with Murphy is that he's not a second baseman. We talked about this on a previous podcast with Mark Carrig of Newsday, and he said that, you know, that he's just a guy playing. He's a more natural third baseman than second baseman, but obviously the Mets have no opening there. He really should be a first baseman, but you know the Mets want to get a little more offense out of that position, and if Murphy can play a passable second base, which again Mark says is debatable, so that's not exactly what the Yankees should be going there for, I guess. If you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with giving Ryan some starts there, but I do think they want to see, you know, what kind of groove Roberts can get into if he's out there playing every day. And it's just a matter of consistency. It's a matter of when he's played consistently, he has had some success. He's not going to hit for power or anything. He's not going to steal a bunch of bases like he has in the past. But I don't think he's been, you know, the 50-pound weight around the neck that he seemed at times. He still has an 84 OPS plus. It's not great, but it's not, again, it's around the level of Jeter all considered. So it's not like he's killing the team. Putting a guy like Ryan out there could help in some situations, but again, Ryan would help more playing shortstop than he would playing second base. I'm just not sure the trade-off is worth it. I think the potential for Roberts to do a little bit better than he's doing now, maybe get to a 95 OPS plus, is worth playing him out there over Ryan, who is definitely suited more to a bench role. So yes, I said getting Murphy from the Mets sounds great, but given that he's a worse defensive second baseman than Roberts, I don't think it's worth whatever they would have to pay to bring him over. And finally, we have a question from Joseph. He writes, I think the Almonte versus Ichiro discussions highlights the general issue I have with the Yankees organization and how they use their kids. Why not let Almonte fill in, see what they have with him, and possibly trade him if he shows something, since the outfield is pretty much locked up for a couple of years? We, as in the Yankees, overvalue our prospects internally, but never give them the opportunity to play in relatively low-risk situations like fourth outfielder. I know Ichiro makes money, but what are your thoughts on the general use of Almonte? I think that they've used Almonte just fine. He's gotten a few starts, even in right field over Ichiro. And here's the thing is Ichiro's having a pretty good year. You can't overlook that. You know, you want to play the kids. But, you know, Almonte's not especially high ceiling. He's not a guy that's going to factor into the long-term situation. He's not a guy that's really going to bring him back a lot in a trade. You know, the only way he's going to bring them back a lot in a trade is if he plays a lot and proves himself, in which case they probably want to keep him. But, you know, Ichiro has an over 400 on base. He's hitting 351 this year. And Girardi has seemingly used him in the exact right spots. He's limited his plate appearances. Even with Beltran out, Ichiro hasn't been overexposed. I think that there's just no question right now. If you want to win ball games, you can't be thinking about trying to build up trade value for a guy like Zoilo Almonte, even though he could be decent. He could be a future contributor in a fourth outfielder capacity to the Yankees. Ichiro is the guy right now. He's being paid. He's doing well. He's the guy with the experience. And I don't see any good reason to, you know, not play him at this point, just because you have a kid who might be able to help. You know, the Yankees are still all about winning games today, as much as they know they need to build up the farm to win tomorrow. So that's it for the question-answer section segment of this River Avenue Blues podcast. Again, you can always send us in questions to podcast@riveravblues.com, and we will read your question on air. Now, we do have a new little feature we're going to try out. You can give us a call and leave a voicemail. We'll play that voicemail on the air and answer your question. A little more radio feel that way. Our number is 716-393 5330. Give us a call, leave us a voicemail. No one's going to pick up, and we will play it on the air and answer it as if you were calling into the radio show. So let's see if we can get a couple people to try that out this week, and we'll try to hit that up on Thursday night for the podcast that comes out on Friday. So coming up in a few, we have Will Leach of Sports on Earth and New York Magazine talking a little Cardinals. This is the New York Yankees Injury Update, sponsored by nobody. If you'd like to sponsor this segment, please give us an email, podcast@riveravblues.com. Well, we have the same players on the disabled list for the third straight podcast, but we do have a couple of updates. Michael Pineda will throw an extended spring training game on Tuesday, so he could be on the road back. Sean Kelly played catch from 75 feet on Monday, so Tuesday morning will be a big test for him. If he wakes up sore like he did last time, he could be shut down again. If not, they might have a clearer rehab path. And Carlos Beltran on Monday swung a bat 30 times, 15 from each side of the plate, with what was apparently a non-regulation bat. He will, if he feels good on Tuesday morning, he will go out and take another 30 swings with a normal bat. So that's a positive direction. Again, a lot's going to depend on what happens on Tuesday morning when he wakes up. If he feels bad, he could be shut down. If he feels good, he'll swing the bat and see how it goes there. The other update is that Mark Teixeira was scratched from the lineup on Monday with a sore wrist. Apparently, he was told that would happen from time to time. It popped up apparently at the end of the Cubs series, and it bothered him all weekend. He told Joe Girardi about it on Monday, so Joe gave him the day off. He's expected to be back in the lineup for Tuesday. And then we have no real updates on Francisco Cervelli, who is on the DL until at least June 14th. But it sounds like he will be back and ready by that 60-day expiration date. And CC Sabathia, there's no real update on him except he's working out in a pool until he has enough strength to work out on solid ground. Then he begins the process of strengthening his knee before he gets back on the mound. So that was a pretty short New York Yankees injury update, sponsored by nobody. So in a second, we're going to cut into some audio with Will Leach of Sports on Earth and New York Magazine. Unfortunately, when I went to import the audio file, the first 10 minutes or so of the conversation were either garbled or kind of blank. It was weird. It kind of kicked in minute 12 or so. We still have about almost 15 minutes of conversation on the record, and we're talking more about the missed part is about more about the Cardinals and Albert Pujols, and Will will probably tell this story a billion times. But we get into some New York stuff, and we're talking about Brian Cashman, the New York media, a bit when we cut in. So my apologies to Will, my apologies to the readers, to the listeners. This was unexpected and frankly disheartening. But in the meantime, here is Will in the middle of a conversation.
Those guys were ever overhyped, and none of those guys, like, you know, Pujols, no one knew who he was until spring training. You know, you saw this with Carpenter. Carpenter came out of nowhere. You know, you feel like the Cardinals have put the Cardinals, in a lot of ways, what they've done with the farm system, these young players, I think is an indictment of Cashman, because he's had so long for this to happen. You're seeing a little bit of having come together now, but still, you don't see the pipeline. And when you think of the opportunities the Yankees have had to put that together, and they haven't, I do feel like that's an indictment.
Yeah, and it's odd because they had a chance. You know, it was, you know, Hal Steinbrenner called a meeting last offseason or the end of last season to talk about what went wrong, and no one got fired.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
it seems like George would have fired those guys years ago.
And I'm not sure that would have been right either.
No.
To be clear, but I do think that there is a weird sort of, you know what, the money is just coming in so much that, like, it's hard. And I think it's actually a rational reaction, to be honest. I feel like at a certain level, you know, Steinbrenner's craziness on that type of stuff and heads will roll is kind of irrationally thinking and maybe not the best way to handle the situation, particularly when there's that much money coming in. But I do think there has an element of complacency is the wrong word, but there is an element of, listen, we're obviously going to do everything we can to win all the time, but we are making so much money that let's not be stupid. And I think you've seen that. And I think it's led to, you know, here's another thing about the Cashman thing is them going over that financial threshold last year. I know that everyone's like, yeah, they're the Yankees. Of course they were going to do that. But like, it literally, like, they, you know this as well as anyone. There were 2 years where they did not put the best team on the field because they were trying to get to this number, and then they just blew it off for nothing and lost Cano. Like, maybe you can justify some of these decisions in the micro on an individual basis, but on a macro basis, it doesn't look like there's a plan. And to me, the teams that succeed, even if they have down years here or there, the teams that succeed have a plan. And I know the Yankees have been better this year than I thought they were going to be, and they put together a much better team, particularly considering all the injuries troubles that they've had. But again, those injury problems, that's what happens when you have an older team like that. To me, it is surprising to me that I feel like there's more trouble brewing. I feel like they're set up in a bad spot long term, and as more you can say all you want, oh, they'll just spin their way out of it. They'll just spin their way out of it. I mean, maybe they will and maybe they won't. But like, you know, the sad part about this for the Yankees for me is they don't have to spin their way out of it. They can be smart about it. I look at the Yankees money as a Cardinal fan with envy, and the Cardinals have a very healthy payroll. Oh, but yeah. but to look at I look at what the Yankees do, and I realize, wow, like, they can do everything right and still go get whoever they want. And to me, the fact that they've had the opportunity to do that and could have done it on the fly that didn't, I think is an indictment that maybe I don't think they get criticized enough for.
Yeah, no, I can totally see that. And in contrast, you know, what's kind of funny is, you know, when you talk about the Yankees, you always talk about the ownership playing such a big role. But with the Cardinals, I don't even think I know who the Cardinals' owner is.
Yeah, yeah, they're really good about it, because he's also a close personal friend of W. Yeah. And it is a very St. Louis thing. We talk about the New York media, and you know, St. Louis has some really, like, just like the New York media, like Mark Feinstein's very good. Like, a lot of those guys are very good. I don't mean to like imply that they're not. But in St. Louis is the same way. Like, Derek Gould and Bernie Miklas from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch are terrific reporters. But on the whole, the Cardinals are the company in a company town. Like, they are allowed to get away with everything. There was a story I remember in the early 90s, Ray Lankford, who played for years, I think that he was the guy that Baseball Prospectus did the Hall of Nearly Great guy about. He was he was a guy that wasn't as good for the Hall of Fame, but was a really good player for a really long period of time and very underrated. He was a very solid Cardinal for a very long time. He got busted in a prostitution ring, and it literally never – it made the paper in like a blip and it was never brought up again. Like, I just don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, he's on ESPN now, isn't he?
I'm not sure. I don't know if I'm not sure I've seen him, but he was a beloved St. Louis guy. He lived in St. Louis in the offseason. Everybody loved him. I loved him. He's one of my favorite players. But like, the idea that would happen, and like, no one even knew it. Like, if you search Ray Lankford prostitution or whatever, there's like one little tiny blip in an Associated Press story. And I try to imagine, like, if that would have happened to a Yankee in the early 90s, we would still use that guy's name as a punchline for prostitution. So you know, I think there is an advantage that comes to that for the Cardinals. I think the team benefits from, you know, I think that they are so beloved in St. Louis and the surrounding areas. And by surrounding areas, I mean several states, including mine, Illinois, where I grew up. They are so beloved there that they can get away with anything. You know, it never really gets too negative there. You know, I'm trying to think. I thought the other day, I was like, is there a guy in Cardinals history that's like Carl Pavano? That's like the guy that just got ran out of there.
Oh,
and, you know, and honestly, this is going to be crazy to say, the closest we actually have to it is probably Tino Martinez. Like,
really?
He is probably, in all honesty, he's probably the least popular Cardinal, and he's not even that unpopular. Most people don't even remember he was there. But it's funny because he was in a similar situation in St. Louis that he was in New York. He took over from McGuire. And then McGuire was still beloved at the time, and he was terrible. And he gave this interview saying, I was sad. I really wanted to stay with the Yankees. I really don't know this league. This is all weird. He had signed a 3-year contract, and they waived him after 2 years. And that was when he had that year with Tampa Bay before he came back to New York. And he's not that unpopular. Like, it's really before him, it was probably Gary Templeton, who was the shortstop before Ozzie Smith, who literally flipped off the fans one day. Like, it actually requires that. So, and because of that, I think that works for the Cardinals' benefit and detriment sometimes, in that, you know, right now we're in a good phase where you know, they've been able to build this kind of success. But even if the Cardinals are not, if they have a down 2 year stretch, they're still going to be a popular team. They're probably not as popular as they are right now, but still a very popular team. That works against them sometimes, allows them to get away with things they shouldn't get away from, but it also allows them to succeed in a way that I wish the Yankees would be able to do, which is, you know, you can build on the fly. If the Cardinals have a down year, it's not a tragedy that you have to go trade for, you have to go sign a ton of free agents in the offseason or go make a bunch of big trades. There is an understanding that, you know, I think DeWitt, Bill DeWitt, the owner, the primary owner of the Cardinals, said once that he feels like a caretaker rather than an owner of the team. Now, that's, of course, a lot of PR spin, but I think that is the notion of how that team is perceived. It's considered a community thing that you try just the humans not to screw up.
Yeah, and I don't think and with the Cardinals and the envy of the league, basically, even though, you know, bad start or not, I don't think they're going to have a down year because their pitching is just such built on a solid base. I'm on their page right now. I didn't realize Adam Wainwright was only 32.
Yeah,
like, he seems like he's been around a little bit longer than that.
Yeah, you know, and it's nice to have an ace like that, but, you know, it's worth knowing it's pitching, you know, and
yeah.
Pitching's weird. Like, you know, I thought Shelby Miller was going to be the stud that took – like, I thought Shelby Miller would be a Cy Young candidate right now. I think he was billed that way. We all kind of thought that's where he would be at this stage in his career. I mean, he's 23 years old. He's got a long way to go. But he was clearly – and now he's a fourth starter kind of barely in a lot of ways. And that, A, that speaks well to the Cardinals' depth, but also speaks to the unpredictability of pitching in a lot of ways. And really, to me, the Wainwright has been – you know, he's this connection to Chris Carpenter, who is probably of those Cardinals teams that won in 06 and 11, now because Pujols left, the two guys that are the symbols of those team are Yadier Molina and Chris Carpenter. Like, Carpenter was the way that he was the embodiment. He's the type of guy that'll get his number retired by the Cardinals, even though he won't go in the Hall of Fame. Like, he is beloved in the way that Willie McGee was beloved there. So, you know, I think and Wainwright was a connection to him. He was kind of his Carpenter was his mentor, his connection to that. But we really felt that, like, you know, so Wainwright is Wainwright. But to me, the guy that has really changed this has been Waka. Like, Waka fell from the sky. He was a like late first round pick. They got, of course, they famously got that pick by losing Pujols. he was a compensatory pick on that. But no one thought, like, they thought he was good. They picked him because they thought he was closer to be ready for the majors and had a ceiling of like a fourth or fifth starter. They saw him as like a Rick Porcello or Mike Leake type of guy. And he shows up and he's this. And the Cardinals can say what they want about that, but they didn't see that coming, you know. So the point is, so much of pitching is luck. You think you've got a lot of pitching depth and you blink and it's all gone. You know, so for me, you know, I get more excited with the Cardinals coming in the line. Are there outfielders? You know, if you look, the Cardinals starting outfield in AAA right now is Oscar Tavares, Randall Grichuk, who is the guy, Oscar Tavares, who's probably the number one hitting prospect in baseball right now.
Especially with Jurickson Profar kind of.
Yeah, exactly.
He's out for the year, so.
Yeah, it's terrific. Like, he is – he's hitting, like, 330 right now, and he's – you know how minor leagues are with homers. He's got, like, 13 homers. He's hitting the crap out of the ball. He's, like – basically, the Cardinals have a stretch of 10 games in American League parks at the beginning of June. It's a foregone conclusion he will come up for those games to be the DH. They've got Stephen Piscotty, who is a top – he'll be a top 20 prospect at the end of this year. And they've got Randall Grichuk, who is a top 100 prospect that they got in the David Freese deal. Their starting outfield in the minor leagues right now is better than, I would say, at least a third, probably more, of major league teams' outfields right now. But the Cardinals actually have a full outfield right now.
Yeah.
They have Alan Craig, and they have Alan Craig, a guy who probably shouldn't be a right fielder, but you've got Matt Adams at first.
Yeah.
You've got Holiday in left, and then you've got Jay and Borges in center. And so you've got so much stacked there. There's so much talent coming there that you've, on one hand, you feel like, well, they've got to make a move. And I feel like if it were the Yankees, I mean, no offense to the Yankees, but because of the media on this, there would be a demand that they make a move. We've got too many guys for these spots, and we've got a hole over here. Why aren't we fixing it? The one of the nice things about the Cardinals, one of the nice things about Mozeliak, is they can wait and they can be like, you know what? we're going to wait this stuff to settle out. This, like, you can never have enough talent. Teams, people wanted them to trade Matt Adams and Shelby Miller, or Matt Adams and Michael Wacha for Tulowitzki. Now, Tulowitzki's been great, but, you know, that's still, like, you hoard talent, and I think that they benefited from that because you don't know what's going to happen. So as much as the Cardinals pitching looks nice now, that stuff can fall apart in a second. So to me, I like the Cardinals strategy of compiling and compiling and compiling and compiling and then just filling in where you need.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look at the Rangers from a few years ago. You know, they were, you know, Taylor Teagarden, Jared Salamakia, and Max Ramirez were loaded at catcher, and what happened? And all those guys bombed out.
Well, it's hilarious too. The Rangers just went through this offseason. The idea, like, they people have been bugging the Rangers for years. You guys have to make that trade. You have to make the trade for you down. So what they do, they did it, and it completely fell apart. Like, you know, I think that, like, you just never know. You can there's so much great baseball analysis and so many smart people trying to predict what's going to happen, and you just have no idea what's going to happen. And so it becomes more true every year. I love reading about baseball. I love all these smart people that are trying to figure out everything they can about baseball because it's all right there. It feels on your fingertips, like you're going to be able to find it, figure it all out. And then you look, and all of a sudden the Rangers are falling apart, are this terrible team, and they had this surplus of talent that's all of a sudden all gone because they made one trade, or two trade if you count the Chris Davis trade. So, you know, for me, like, that's what I like about the Cardinals, and that's what – well, I like the Cardinals because I've liked them since I was four. But the thing I love about the way they're doing this now is they are not – they don't have – to worry about public opinion. This is a team that let Albert Pujols go, that traded David Fries, who not only has had the most amazing World Series you can possibly have, grew up in St. Louis, and they traded him off for a minor leaguer and a center fielder who is a great defensive player but a so-so hitter. The fact that they have the courage to do that, I'm not sure a lot of other markets would allow a team to get away with that, those kind of long-term moves. And it's only benefited the Cardinals. So my point is that I feel like a lot of the benefits of the Cardinals are not just because they have a smart front office, though they do, but it's also they have a smart front office that's really not going to be questioned too much, which means they can make long-term moves that might not be popular in the short term, but people trust them to do them.
Absolutely. Well, great. Will, it was great talking to you. Thanks for taking the time on Memorial Day of all days.
Oh, of course.
You know, holiday and everything, everything's getting cramped up.
Oh, please. Listen, I just watched you guys beat us. So I thank you for letting me do this and not making me cry.
Oh, that's just a huge perk.
I would love – I have to say I just moved out of New York. I lived in New York for almost 14 years, and I wanted so much – you know, I moved there in January 2000, and the Cardinals went to – 4 World Series in that time, and the Yankees, I think, went to 3 or 4 in that time, and they never crossed over. I won the Yankees-Cardinals World Series so badly. So I'm hoping this is the year, 40 years since the last one. I think it'd be pretty awesome if we got it this year.
Well, you know what? If we do, Will, we'll have to both make it back to New York to see a game.
It's a deal. I will absolutely be there. I'll talk to you again then.
All right, well, everybody, Will Leach from Sports on Earth and New York Magazine. And with that, another edition of the River Avenue Blues podcast comes to a close. Thanks and apologies again to Will Leach. I really wish we could recreate the first part of that conversation. It was a really interesting look at the Cardinals. But we will be back Friday. We'll be talking a little Yanks, a little Twins, and anything else that comes up between now and then.